Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Bob, here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we have a new boy band in the house. Get your grandma, get everybody, gather around your iPhone, your iPad, your iMac. And it's time for This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest, and here we are. We've got some fantastic guests.
We do. We've got a bunch of dudes here.
You guys do look like a band.
We're all wearing t-shirts, and black t-shirts and jeans. I forgot the Brooks running shoe.
Yeah, you got to get the shoes.
We got Professor Mark Young. He's a professor at the SC Business School, the Marshall School of Business. What's your official title?
It's really, really long. Just Professor the Marshall School.
And Mark and I wrote the book. The
Narcissist. I remember when you were writing it.
The Mirror Effect. And then Caleb Bacon is here. And Caleb, what do you want to promote?
Hey, guys. I don't know. I'm a television writer who needs a job.
Oh,
so I could promote my availability.
Okay, good.
But I've got a five-week-old daughter at home. So the fact that my availability is not that good, it's kind of okay right now.
How about the pod?
No pod right now.
What?
Yeah.
Why not?
It's just been on break.
I love that pod.
Yeah.
One of the most strange pod experiences I had was because of Caleb. He came down and worked out with me, and we did a pod while we worked out. And fast forward like 2 weeks, I was in Florida at a gym, and a dude takes out his earplugs and goes, "I'm listening to you and Caleb right now." I was in Florida.
a workout pod?
Yeah.
Hey, let's talk about pods for a second. My phone yesterday, like when I scanned over looking at something, it said 79 pods, you know, on your pod thing.
Yeah.
And 79 of them had downloaded that I'm supposed to listen to. Now I'm feeling anxious, like, oh, I'm not keeping up.
It's funny,
all the pods that I wanted to follow.
I was looking at that too. I wanted to like erase a bunch.
How many 16, are on yours?
16, but I usually have like two. So I gotta
erase. Bob, do you need tech support?
I do. I have John's right there.
Yeah. Okay. Good.
No, but because Marin, I always
Mark,
intend to listen to him,
Mark
but
Marin.
You got to be in the right emotional place to listen to those.
Why did you ask me if I was on Marin?
Because somebody commented in one of the emails you said something they disagreed with on Marin.
Oh.
But, you know, I just find like he's probably my favorite interviewer, right? But I got to be in the right mood, and it's got to be the right guests. I have to be alone.
You know what?
You know, pods are not just put them on in the car because you got traffic.
Yeah, you can't work out to Marin. You know, or actually, I can't listen to that show after dark. Like, there's just something about like the anxiety,
the negativity
in his life that
you know
I just need to be in a good place.
I've been trying for 18 months to go to lunch with him. Coffee? Will you help me?
Yeah, yeah.
Will you join us?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Let's go together, the three of us. That'd be good.
I heard he wants to move out of Eagle Rock or
Highland Park.
Yeah,
whatever. It's all hip because it's Hipsterville there now.
Yeah, he's the most he's anti everything, and Hipsterland just crept all around his house.
Oh yeah, it's crazy.
So now we can sell his house and make some money.
That's right.
Yeah, so
that's
so
Los Angeles way.
I like Mark a lot, even though he's negative and anxious.
But like six of his are there that I haven't listened to, and I'm like, ah, shit. Now I'm getting so far behind. You guys, how many pods do you listen to in a week?
Oh,
Drew.
I listen to lectures. I go to iTunes U and listen to college and university professors and things and some podcasts.
You're still doing that?
Yeah, still doing that. It's ridiculous.
How many do you listen to?
I listen to a ton. But
what are some of the ones you like the best? You listen to Serial?
No.
How come Serial is the biggest
pod? I don't get it.
It's just like an old-time radio mystery thing.
Yeah.
It's because it's a format that works. And it's also like...
But it's been around for 85 years, that format.
But not an MP3. So it's new to young people. You know, what's new is old, what's old is new. But it's also like a shorter-term commitment because the limited series is sort of a new thing for the pod world.
Now, speaking of young people, that's why I brought Dr. Young in here, is because...
Because his name is Young?
No.
So he's a young person?
No.
No, he deals with a lot of young people.
He's been teaching the business school forever, and he's in with the kids all the time. And I figured you had some ideas about this, too. We want to try to help, you know, the sort of 25 to 35 or 40-year-old age group. And Bob and I are having great – Bob particularly is having great frustration in doing so. Is that fair to say?
I can't reach them because their mechanisms in their mind don't have particular ingredients, one being ambition. Is with the working class
– drug addict.
They'd rather not also – They just don't really care. I say, you know, because I've been motivating drug addicts for 20 years. You say, don't you want to have an apartment? Don't you want to have your own life and your own car and be free of drugs? And they go, I guess. You know what I mean? They're not motivated.
They say, Bob, I don't know. What do you want me to do?
What do you want me to do?
Yeah.
See, I think I have.
And I'm not marginalizing all millennials. I know also Silicon Valley is filled with them that are changing the world. Not really much at all, but they make billions of dollars saying they're changing the world. We've had a couple on here. But the fact
you're
it's true.
Cynic. But keep going.
No, so, the world got changed by baby boomers. It's not getting changed by millennials. All they're doing is readopting or you know.
Is this about cereal? Huh? You're saying that's not even an original idea?
No, but I'm saying Wozniak revolutionized the world.
Yeah.
Millennials who invent an app that the porn picture disappears in an hour are not revolutionizing the world. So I'm yet to have a decision that millennials are so important.
Okay, so
baby boomers have had a profound effect on the way Western culture is. Millennials are praised as, oh, they're the geniuses. You know, this whole thing, Maker, did you hear about this?
What?
Biggest $700 million debacle in history that Disney thought, oh, they're millennials. They're cool. None of them have titles. Oh, we're just going to do whatever we want. And Disney lost $500 million.
Like,
whoops. Because they couldn't produce anything. Right?
So go ahead. Well,
see, I'm dealing, I think, with a
rarefied group.
Yeah, really rarefied
group. But I'm telling
people.
You, I saw symptoms of something that I felt familiar when I spoke to your class.
Okay, so I think there's two things.
So hold on, I spoke to his class last week, and I walked away.
Huh?
And I walked away with the same feeling after talking to a high school class, too. And so that's why I figured you had some insights here.
The thing is that many of these folks, you know, like in universities, have ambition. But it's ambition driven by anxiety. It's ambition
from their parents.
No, the anxiety to get a job.
The world
to succeed. Once they get those jobs, it's not clear what happens next. But they feel enormous pressure and peer pressure to get jobs. So I think that there are a lot of contributing forces. Things like Facebook, where there's such social comparison going on, that you know nobody ever. You know, post anything negative on Facebook, right? So if you go onto Facebook and you just kind of peer down from outer space and you look at the general student population at a place like USC, everybody's living a great life. And so the pressure from their peers drives them in part to want to succeed. So at a university, name any university in the United States, when you're a student at these places, you've got to keep up with everybody else. Now, whether that's your true desire or not, I think that's another question. But I think that social media, Facebook in particular, creates this world for people where they have to, you know, feel like they have to succeed.
Do you think that maybe Bob's population is fallen so far behind they feel hopeless, like impossible?
Well, hopelessness is a definite state that they feel, that there's no jobs. I tell them media lies to you all the time. There's lots of opportunity everywhere, but it takes working in the mailroom.
Right.
David Geffen worked in the fucking mailroom. None of these millennials want to work in the mailroom. They know Geffen because he sponsors the Gay and Lesbian Center of Hollywood.
In the mailroom is a bar right down the street.
You know what I'm saying?
That's very
they
true.
They don't know historically how you get to be David Geffen. And when you tell them, they don't like it at all.
I think there's probably 5% of students who are getting their MBAs are willing to go back, you know, to the mailroom. But that's a very, very small percentage. Some know that they really want to pay their – they have to pay their dues.
And the millennials I'm dealing with are more addiction community, working class, middle class, not a lot of opportunities, different than your population. But I can tell you they don't go to school because they say, who fucking cares? A lot of college graduates can't find a fucking job. So it's the same attitude that education doesn't lead to opportunity. Even if you did get an education, you're not going to get an opportunity. That's the media brainwashing them that there's no opportunity.
Now, Mark, Bob, I think we've gone through a period, you're a business school professor, we've gone through a period of really impoverished job market, more than I think we realize. Would you agree?
again, it depends on how you stratify.
Yeah, it depends how you qualify impoverished. But right. It just feels like we went through a worse period than we really realized, at least from the perspective of these kids.
Yeah.
Okay. I was making a case to Bob that, you know, we need to enhance capital and funding of small businesses and, you know, finance, and whether it's Wall Street or banks, wherever the money's coming from. And Bob immediately would launch into this weird diatribe about how
people – I've started four businesses in the last 4 years and never got money from a bank. I have a cash flow business that grosses $800,000 a month. You can't get a bank loan. How the fuck is that Wall Street or the banking industry helping small business? They won't give you a loan.
So hold on.
So you're forced to go to...
Bob, let him answer.
Okay.
Let him answer.
Okay.
See, I think a lot of it depends on where you're willing to start. So for instance, you know...
Wells Fargo would be a good spot. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there are lots of jobs out there, for instance, for students with college...
No, we're talking about creating jobs.
No, we're talking about
now.
Banking.
Now,
in general.
Creating jobs. Businesses.
I'm saying you can't go... You can't show, I'm a small business, I'm growing, I need help, I need credit, I need money. You can't. Even if you're grossing $800,000 a month. Because banks don't believe in business anymore. That's what I believe. So you go to equity funds.
Yeah.
You go to equity funds or personal loans or... You do. I'm doing it. I did it 2 years ago.
But that's equity funds is a Wall Street finance instrument.
So we have a couple of very distinct groups at USC. We have students who are entrepreneurs who believe they have a great idea and they want to get out there and create a new business for themselves. And we've had quite a bit of success. On the other hand, the vast majority of students want to go into established businesses already. And the point I was going to make earlier is many of them just don't want to start at a low level getting into those jobs, like going into Wells Fargo as a junior executive as opposed to kind of a mid-level executive. So the problem that we have is students' aspirations are way too high for their experience levels.
They have to pay your salary. They know those loans are going to be due soon.
Absolutely. And that's Caleb's a really good point because
that's what the anxiety
but the anxiety comes in because you come out of SC, you know, and you're a couple hundred thousand dollars in debt.
But there, I think there's a bigger problem here, and Bob is sort of representing that. I need you to attack him or set him straight a little bit. The fundamental faith in how capitalism works isn't here. He says you cannot create jobs through capital. He's literally saying that.
No, I'm not. I'm saying that the banks, we were talking specifically about the rigged game of Wall Street and the stock market being the indicators of what's happening in real life in the business community. I'm saying I'm in the business community. I have a expertise in an industry. I've been in it for 20 years. I have an industry. I can show you the books. I can show you the cash flow. I can show you the net. I can show you the overhead. I can show you everything. And Wells Fargo, who doesn't mind being our bank, by the way,
right,
says, no, we can't loan you $400,000 to expand, to improve. That is happening to small business all across America. And that is because America sees these indicators of a robust economy as the stock market.
So hold on. So let's
right.
Let's
that's where we were talking about. It makes me angry. Every politician in Washington, whether Democrat, Republican, Independent, Liberal, Left, Right, Center, says they all care about small business. No, they fucking don't.
Okay, so
there you go.
I think a lot of it though has to do with risk management. You know, on the part of these banks trying to
who are they loaning money to then?
They're loaning money to
low risk,
well-established
bonds.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Bonds.
Bob, that's Dodd-Frank.
Okay.
That's the government getting involved in banking.
Yeah. And then when you look at the mortgage crisis, you know, banks are pulling back like crazy. They have become very, very conservative when it comes to loaning
again,
money.
Because of the regulation.
Exactly.
They're being required to do this.
Yeah.
So you're blaming the banks. It's the government that has overregulated them to the point they can't function.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
We didn't discuss this beforehand.
That's a typical conservative Republican stance.
No.
I know both of your guys' politics.
No, Bob, I'm
exactly the opposite.
That's simply a fact.
You're saying Dodd-Frank, which was a Democratic bill.
Who cares who did it?
Right.
Who cares?
It's not just that. It's... You have to think about the incentives on the part of people who are loaning money, too, because if they make one or several big mistakes, they're out, right? So they're extremely risk-averse. They're conservative as to who they're going to loan money to. And for the most part, their heads have been on the chopping block for a long time after the
So then
the failure
watch
of
what happens in small business. So I have to go and I have to borrow it from a guy for a much higher interest rate, right?
Yep.
So then I have to reduce my cost to pay him back the money.
Right.
Or not forfeit my business to him. So now the quality of goods, I would imagine, or whether it's a bakery in the Midwest, a treatment center in Malibu, a car battery place in Las Vegas, the quality, I have to look at the money and I have to reduce costs so that I can pay back the loan while I'm hoping to expand. This gets your eyes off the ball. You make mistakes in a situation like that. And I just see there's real problems of all of Washington saying they care about small business, and a very, very kind of successful small business can't get a bank loan.
Well, again, I think it's hard to make really broad sweeping statements like that. For instance, have all your business plans been really thoroughly vetted by experts?
Well, it only has a 3-year history, so that's one thing that they wanted to see,
right?
Comparable numbers from somewhere else, right?
Right.
Then you can lie, like all these treatment centers do, and say, and cook the books to make it look like it nets 40%. That's why all the equity funds went bust, what Bain went bust backing CRC, because all those books were cooked. They were not making the net that they said, but for some reason, no one was overseeing that.
We got to take a break. We got to take a break. Right back for this. And of course, we want to thank our friends at Hydralyte. I love this product. It's an effervescent tablet and some powders. It goes into your water bottle. It's rapid, effective recovery from dehydration. Of course, that requires a proper balance of sodium, glucose, water. It's crucial if you're sick, been vomiting, or even experiencing heavy perspiration from heavy exercise. Water alone does not do it. Sports drinks are far less effective than this well-balanced rehydration solution. Simply, Hydralyte's formulation is based on established, proven science. It's the best rehydration product I have seen, and it comes in great flavors like orange, berry, lemonade. It's available as a pre-mixed drink, a powder. My personal preference is the effervescent tablets you can simply drop into a glass or a bottle of water. Compared to sports drinks, Hydralyte delivers up to 4 times the electrolyte and 75% less sugar. They're appropriate for all ages. Each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. You can find Hydralyte at Rite Aid or online at Amazon.com. And for more information, visit Hydralyte.com. That is Hydralyte, H-Y-D-R-A-L-Y-T-E, Hydralyte.com. We're back.
So good. I'm getting off. I know I'm going down a rabbit hole. I'm very angry at Washington. I think they lie all the time, and it doesn't matter who's lying. And now supposedly this idea that somebody's going to deregulate everything and it's going to save the world. We just came
it'll
from
get a, you a bank. It'll get you a bank loan. That's what it'll do. It will get you a bank loan.
But it also led to the mortgage crisis.
That's right. That's
so,
why.
So you have to have some cooler heads prevailing. But getting back to the millennials, they see this world and they just go, it's hopeless.
That's right.
I feel hopeless. So I can't. I know there's a lot of hope,
Caleb,
and a lot of opportunity.
Give us hope.
Yeah,
Caleb.
Shark Tank. Friday nights at 9 o'clock on ABC. You see the American dream once a week, and it happens. And that's, other than that, yeah, there's not much. But that's one thing.
That is true.
Now, when I spoke to these kids, I walked away with a very strange feeling. And it all kind of somehow has got to tie together, and I'm not sure what it is. High school age kids, when you talk to them about the reality of their electronic media and stuff, get very paranoid, very defensive, and start claiming the government is just like you with the capitalism. They start claiming the government's hiding this from us. Like, no, you just don't understand.
No, it's right out in plain sight.
Hang
to
on.
Me.
Hang on, listen to me. And so they get so in your group, I was talking to his group. They had a similar kind of a convince me attitude, and the thought,
game is rigged. That's what they
the
believe.
The thought in my head every time is, who do you think you are? And not because you're not smart or you don't have good knowledge. You have no experience. You have no wisdom in these things. You think you. It's almost like they've substituted information for knowledge,
right?
And they are very different things. And I don't know how I'd convince them of that difference, because they're so arrogant with their information that wisdom has no value. Does that make sense?
It's a generation of overconfidence.
Am I reading that right?
No, you're right.
And I walked away.
What I say is they have too much self-esteem for achieving nothing.
Well, it's not yet. Because you can't
help a drug addict. It's all based on esteem, right? And they have too much self-esteem for being in the predicament they're in.
Well, I think the access to information provides it overconfidence to some extent. You know,
these students read like crazy, and they
think they know everything, but they've had no experience.
Yeah, and there is a gigantic distance. It's like saying you should be a doctor after you finish your second year of medical school. No, you can't do shit. You have to go out in the wards for 6 more years and experience this stuff. Then you maybe have some.
Have you seen WebMD?
No, exactly.
I go to WebMD and I'm like, doctor, I'm basically already one.
But what about in comedy world and the entertainment world? Are millennials different? Are the things that went on at Maker? Those kids are obviously different than older, traditional, established kind of arms of entertainment. I'm telling you.
I think that's where you see some of the most ambition, because those people see new channels for like monetizing
money,
pop culture.
Right.
And so they're happy to be in on the ground floor of a lot of things and make their own videos and do podcasts or have some sort of branded Snapchat account, like whatever it is. So they don't think I'm going to go to the mailroom. They think I'm going to create my own thing.
Brand. And they talk about brand a lot. Millennials know what brand is.
Yeah, that's a little annoying.
Yeah. They have their own brands.
It's like, well, your brand is your freshman in high school.
If it's a more lucrative brand than me being a drug treatment counselor, I can tell you that. Some of these kids make $1.5 million just being a personality on Facebook. It's crazy.
Well, another thing I've observed, too, is that the job market, because of technology, is it tricks people. Because I have some friends who have, over the years, have had trouble getting work. And it's like, well, I applied for 50 jobs today. And I got nothing. It's like, yeah, you were on monster.com for 45 minutes, yeah. and your brain tells you did something that should produce a result. But the reality is that's not how it works anymore, because a million other people did the same thing.
How many applications does a typical mid-level management position get? 1,000? 300?
I don't know what the average is, but hundreds. Hundreds and hundreds.
So where you had to usually headhunt 20 years ago, 30 years ago, to find that person to fill that thing. Now you can just put something on in the internet and 300 likely candidates come to you.
I can tell you one thing, though. with a lot of these students, if you can find a millennial that has all this information, they've studied religiously for years, and they have this amazing ability, they're as good or better than any students I've had for 20 years.
Well, Zuckerberg's a millennial, right?
So students, they're excellent.
Is Zuckerberg a millennial? Yeah.
Absolutely excellent.
Qua students.
Absolutely. And then if you can find someone with a little bit of experience who can extrapolate from that experience, they're off the charts.
So let's look at the kind of icons of millennials. Zuckerberg, Jared Kushner is now, obviously, it just got released yesterday. He made $175 million last year.
Jared from Subway. Oh, no, sorry.
He's jail, though.
He made a lot of money.
A millennial?
No. Well, he likes millennials. Never mind. Okay.
Pre-millennial. Yeah. Post-millennial.
What's the next generation? He likes that generation,
post-millennial.
Too.
Post-millennial.
Kids. Yeah, they're just...
But I saw that number of Jared Kushner. I was like, oh, my God, that little prick. Oh, my God. Oh, my fucking God.
Doing what? What's his
$175 million he made in 2015.
Doing what?
I don't know. Obviously, we need to talk to the
Nobody
business
knows.
Professor.
Nobody knows.
Ivanka's empire.
Right?
Crazy.
But I mean, if you take the top 10 guys like that, they really are absolute geniuses. Absolute geniuses, right? All you need
He thinks he can solve world peace. That's a millennial right fucking there.
Right.
He has no diplomatic experience. He's going to solve the Israeli-Palestinian problem.
I'm okay with that, though. Like, okay, try. What's the worst that can happen?
It hasn't been going so hot for a few thousand years anyway.
What about space travel? Right? Absolutely brilliant stuff.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
But Musk is a baby boomer, right?
Yeah.
He's kind of.
Is he a Gen Xer?
Cusp. Yeah.
He's not a baby boomer.
He doesn't mind failing. Boomers, you know what I love about him? He doesn't mind fucking failing and falling flat on his fucking face.
Yeah.
And just get back up. Like, yeah, I fucking failed. We're going to go again.
Yeah.
Right?
Definition of an entrepreneur. That's an entrepreneur.
That's not that, – I just hope that the millennials have that in them as a generation, but I'm very pessimistic or guarded about what is inside their insides.
I think if you think about it from a statistical point of view, it's the millennials have a really, really high, high range and kind of a low mean,
yes.
a lower mean than, yes.
and,
than
and two, the variance, there's yeah. two like humps, yeah. some way down here and some way up here. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So the mean has gotten lower, but the variance has gotten higher.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yes, it makes sense to me.
But was that in baby boomers? Baby boomers are the generation I was in.
We were pretty much all in the same zone.
We're all somewhere yeah. in the same zone, it seems like.
Well, not this guy.
You're a Gen Xer, right?
Yeah. I'm 36. You're so Gen Xer. I'm not quite
You're a Gen
millennial.
Xer. Is when does it cut off?
Let's see.
We should know.
Yeah.
Well, some people say different things.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like kind of born mid-80s at the earliest.
Is a millennial.
Yeah.
And so that you were born before that?
Yeah, I was born in 80.
Oh, 80. Yeah. 79, 80, yeah.
Oh, she's so looking
he's,
it up.
He's
she's
looking Gen it up. X.
So Gen X was a good, solid generation. I like that. There's some solid motherfuckers in your generation.
Yeah, but they gave us fits too, though. You remember? Remember they all left
them.
College and
they
joined.
They were good. They bought dope from me. They were good.
but thank you for that.
But Gen Xers, when they were younger, were scrutinized highly as having left college and jumped into all the internet bubble businesses and being so naive about
but
how that was going to go.
But they had a passion for life. I remember it. I was there. There was a passion at 22 that I don't see in millennials.
And we wore condoms.
Very
yeah. That was, yeah. That was a thing
rock
we did.
The vote. Were you rocking the vote
with condoms? Yeah.
Okay, here's the data. No precise dates for the Gen X, where it starts or ends. Typically, early 80s as starting birth years and mid-90s, early 2000s as ending birth years. Millennials, doesn't say. Sometimes for Echo Boomer.
I think that was millennials.
Was that millennials?
2000.
Okay, that was millennials.
Okay, so, but so I'm just hoping that something evolves out of them. But there's a lot of concerning stuff. One is they get so devastated by criticism. Mm. So devastated
failure
by fucking criticism.
Very
no, just even disagreeing with them or criticizing
but that's,
them.
But that's everything's kind
or
of
being
considered
condescending
failure.
To them.
Intolerance. There's an intolerance.
Hang on, though. But sensitivity to criticism is a classic narcissistic symptom. So are they more narcissistic? That was the other reason I want Dr. Young in here.
Well, I actually did some, after our book, did some
but
surveys.
But your book was about the Gen Xers were the narcissists who wanted to be world famous scientists. That's the part I remember.
No, the celebrities were the narcissists.
No, but you said at that people were getting into the sciences, picking a science that they could become famous and win the Nobel Prize in. That's what you had told me.
No, I don't remember that at all. We what we had was we showed that the business school students were a little more narcissistic than the general population. Remember, didn't we
right,
have that?
Right.
But that celebrities
MBA
were,
students.
MBA students. But so what did you
But homeless celebrities were much more.
Way
so.
Much more.
Robin
much
Quivers.
More. So how dare you?
If I say her name three times.
And so
I did some follow up yeah. studies, just surveys of just giving the narcissistic personality inventory to groups of people, and certainly found that millennials were, on average, more narcissistic than Gen Xers and baby boomers.
So there you go. So it's been continuing.
And so boundaries, 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 boundaries.
Yeah.
And it's hard to have boundaries with them because they get so offended by boundaries.
Well, the other thing.
Like, I'll give you an example. There's phone rules change at the rehab. I come in, I'm the liberal, I'm the good guy, everybody loves Bob. I come in and they say, you know, they took our phones away. I said, who gives a fuck? That's how you greet me in the morning? Who fucking gives a fuck? You guys are in rehab and you couldn't use your phone, right? You should have seen the look in their faces where they weren't getting what they expected, what they wanted. You know, I was just trying to teach them about, like, I just got here. Can I get a cup of coffee until we start you complaining about the phones? But me just being my regular self, who I've been this way for 40 years, and no one's ever almost cried when I say, who gives a fuck? You know what I'm saying? That sensitivity to criticism is going to really hurt them.
Well, that's a narcissistic thing. That's what that is. The other thing is tendency to narcissistic rage. So when you prick a narcissist when they'll get rageful if you wound them. And then the other thing is, and this is my own theory, this is not necessarily in the literature, but I believe this to be true, is that they like mass hysteria. They like acting out their aggression in groups. I really think that's what happened in France in the guillotine era. I think it's happening right now in social media. I think that's where the frenzy of the group is coming from.
They feed off each other, but it's so individualized.
No,
at least you're out watching somebody's head get chopped off. Right now, you're just in a room pushing.
No, but they get to watch somebody lose their job, and that's the public execution now is losing work, and they keep going. The rage goes, and they spin each other into these rages until they. And then it all stops. Look what happened to Brian Williams. Heard word one about him since he lost his job. Loses his job, stops. It just stops. It's like this catharsis.
Well, his daughter's still got a job, at least.
Yeah, it's like a catharsis. He's got a new job now. But Caleb, you agree with me or no?
Brian Williams is on MSNBC.
Yeah.
1:37 a.m. to 1:42 a.m. Yeah. Nightly, though.
The 11th hour, it's called. It's called the 11th hour. But his daughter's got good work, so maybe she can help him out. The
but
girls,
I'm just saying.
She's on Girls.
Yeah.
Ugh. Oh, I mean, no, it's a good show. It's in its last season. Oh. I'm going to miss it.
For the record, I'm a Girls fan. I am.
That's okay. Are you
a fan all the way through of a show? Because I can't remember. 6 Feet Under was the last show I was like a fan from the pilot to the last episode.
I'm always a late
adopter. Always get lost when they're trying to, you writers, you're trying to keep us engaged by making it more complicated.
It's hard. With comedy, you shouldn't because... If it's supposed to be funny, you don't want people to be confused. Then they're not going to enjoy the humor.
Is that what you think's happening with Girls?
I think
there hasn't been a lot of humor for like 2 years.
There's a little narcissism in the writing. Yeah, that's my thoughts on that.
A little.
I just don't like it when the New York Times tells me that somebody's a voice of anyone's generation. Mm.
Isn't the other gal, the drunk girl, the voice of the generation?
Jemima.
Huh?
Jemima?
No, Schaefer.
The syrup lady?
No, the stand-up woman that's so
Amy?
Offensive.
Amy Schumer.
Oh. Isn't she the voice of the generation?
No, she's like a mascot. And I don't say that in
a
bad way.
She's the first comedian is the proper way of saying female comedian.
Yeah, they love
comedian,
that, Bob.
Yeah, they don't like
she's
that.
She's the first comedian ever to be on a football drinking commercial that I can recall. I don't think Lucille Ball was doing that.
No. I don't. She might have for $1.4 million for a day's work.
Oh, really?
I'm guessing.
Yeah,
that's something like that.
So, will anybody do? Here's another thing for business. Is it okay? And this is something in Gen Xers, baby boomers, I think, had an ethical question about it. I remember Boisky saying greed is good, and the public response to that of what a fucking asshole. Greed is good. We obviously agree now, three generations, multi-generationally, greed is great. Having a lot at the expense of other people not having much is good. That's the way the game is played. Millennials react to that in a really strange way. They don't like that theory. You know, they want everybody to have a lot.
It's an interesting duality because... We have these programs, you know, at SC where students are involved with a huge amount of charitable work. Mm-hmm. I mean, an enormous amount. USC's university has something like 400 outreach programs into the community. And so what I've found is that millennials seem to be
much more
attuned to that and social justice issues than what I remember of students 10, 15 years ago.
And is that why they're not as good as consumers? They're not very, you know, the all of industry is trying to focus on what will they buy, when will they buy it, what makes them buy it, and they're a hard generation to nail down about that.
I think that's just because they're not brand loyal.
They're not brand loyal.
For instance, the Japanese...
Do you know that, Drew?
That makes sense.
Yeah, the Japanese are not brand loyal at all.
Right. I'm Apple loyal. Oh. Like, I'm an Apple loyalist. If they have an organization I can join, I will join it.
They're also used to technology changing. You know, it's hard to be a CD loyalist when CDs go away. And I think, you know, you're a young millennial, maybe you had an iPod, and now that's not a thing.
And they don't have a sense of brand loyalty and entertainment because whatever entertains them that comes on their phone, that's what's funny, that's what's cool, that's why what led to this, the internet stars, is it didn't matter that there was a show on at 8 o'clock that had superstars on it from Friends. You know, how many of the people and Friends have had spin-off shows that have not been very successful? Because the new generation came along, they don't see television like that. They don't watch TV in those time frames.
But I wonder if it's also all these issues we brought up seem to be affecting their ability to have a relationship with a brand or a celebrity or an actor or an actress. They have not only no loyalty to any show or performer, they have no relationship with
them. Yeah, I ask them all the time what kind of music they like, and very rarely do they ever explicitly say, this genre of music or this artist or I love Nirvana or I love, you know, Snoop. They don't have that kind of passion.
If I was in your facility, I would say, the music of Bob Forrest. That's my number one.
New album now. Bob Forrest Friends, 2016 Live. But
that's choice, too. I think there's just too many choices for people to really narrow things down. Like, if you talk to my son, he listens to so many different bands. It's very hard for him to kind of figure out, you know, does he really like this band?
Well, you can figure it out. I've been in this since I was 17. What band will he go pay to see play? That's his favorite band. That's the one that's having the most impact on him.
But why no relationship with it? That's the part that I'm finding troubling. Well, it's the same troubling feeling I had when I walked out of your class. Like, that troubles me that they don't have a relationship.
The other thing that's interesting is what has risen up during the millennials. You don't go see a specific band.
That's because
you go see Coachella, where there's just everybody's playing.
I love
playing.
That band.
Yeah. All right. Especially the early. Speaking of Coachella, we're going to take a little break. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Hey, and a reminder, everybody, you can check out thislifepodcast.com. You can find the podcast there. Also, if you want to support it, please go to drdrew.com and click through on the Amazon banner. That helps us out, too. Doesn't cost you a thing, but keeps a little wind in the sails here. We're back. We all have lots of ideas.
What's happening, brother?
I had a kid.
I know. Isn't
is
it
she
awesome?
A millennial? I don't know.
She what? Got any hope at all?
Gen Z.
She doesn't speak English yet. No language. She's 5 weeks, but
it's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah,
did you see it on the delivery coming on out?
I was there. I was up towards my wife's head, towards the talking part.
You weren't smoking a cigar out in the waiting room.
I mean, I did go to the sports bar to watch a game for
good.
A little bit,
good.
But no, I was there supporting my wife, and we thought it was probably a good idea if I stay towards her head, not her feet, and I was cool with that. We saw some videos in Lamaze class.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking.
Who does those videos?
How about who describes it as the most beautiful thing on earth?
I don't know. I mean, it was...
It's a beautiful thing.
It was fun. I just wish I could have had an epidural, too.
No. No morphine?
No. Bob, I'm in recovery.
Oh, okay.
And they don't give husband epidurals. Because I was just curious. I'm surveying... That should be a thing, though.
Husband
well,
epidural?
It used to be standard to have a couple of shots of booze, I imagine.
Well, half the time, they'd be like, okay, this is where a lot of husbands pass out. I was like, really? Maybe I need an epidural. But no, it was a good experience. Yeah, the hospital took care of my wife and was happy about that.
You got any TV coming up?
No. I've got diapers coming up.
Yeah, I bet.
I'm going to tell you something he told me, which helped me a lot, is it's the father's job. Because a lot of times you don't know what your role is, right? You just don't know. It's the mom is the primary major writer, director, producer.
Yeah, I can see that.
We're just there right behind.
Yes.
To say, here we are.
Yeah.
There's another guy here, too, going to help you, too.
Yes.
Whatever you need it.
Follow behind. What can I do?
And I physically do it at Disneyland because I know she likes seeing me behind Chrissy's face. Like she, you know, you feel a little scared with all these people. And it's like, oh, there's those two faces I recognize.
Yeah.
There's the one face I like a lot. There's the other one that's okay, too.
Yeah. Safety is what they're looking for. But then tell your wife, as I did over and over again, how did you know that? How did you know that? How did you know how to do that? Why'd you do that? I had no idea what was going on.
Do they just like get a book that we don't get?
No. Yeah, it exists in their corpus callosum up here. They're using both
corpus
sides of
their callosum
brain.
Sounds kind of sexy. What is that?
Norwegian death metal band. Really good. I'd pay to see them in concert.
Yeah. So just don't, because I've been there two times in the last 6 years, and you feel like, what am I supposed to be doing? He helped reassure me. You're just supposed to be there.
Yeah, you just be there. But
do you feel that feeling?
I like that. I don't know. I've got some like writing projects I'm doing like at home by myself, and my wife's on maternity leave, so we're both just there. So it's just kind of nice because we can focus on, you know, whatever kind of attention she needs, the kid at the time.
Yeah.
So not too confused yet, but part of that's just because we have like a good kid.
How about
we don't have triplets.
You didn't have that.
You don't.
Yeah, how about the first black poop? It's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Black?
Or whatever it is, greenish.
The very first one?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like black yogurt. I mean, also a good band. I didn't know that was
No, because they finally tell you, apparently, and I told my sister that, my sister-mom. She's like, Bobby, everybody knows that. And I go, how would you know it unless a doctor told you
meconium?
To not be sharp?
Meconium.
It is.
Meconium is sort of what happens during the delivery. But you notice that Bob slipped in sister mom?
I've heard that story.
But so apparently, moms used to tell moms stuff, and dads didn't even know about things. And we would have never seen that poop if we were dads in 1961.
To be fair,
we never would have seen it.
Women always were the part of the human species that shared cultural and organic information. Men... We had no interest. So literally, even if they told us, we wouldn't listen.
Because it didn't apply to us?
We'd just be like, baby poop. Why are you telling me about baby poop? Yeah. Why would women...
Don't you have to pay attention to baby poop? As
now you do.
As a modern 21st century dad?
Yeah, but what if his wife had told him 4 years ago? You think he'd remember it now?
No. I have a bunch of kids or friends who've had kids in the past few years. And I did not care about anything they had to say.
Right.
And then,
right.
Like, a few months ago, it was like, so what do you do when that happens?
Yeah, that's the male system. That's the male system.
Now it's go time.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm all in. I'm paying attention. I'm curious. I'm reading books.
Yeah.
Listening to podcasts that aren't good at all, but about pregnancy stuff. Like, all right.
Did you go to natural birthing classes?
Just because we live in L.A.,
yeah.
You're saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
No.
We went to Lamaze, but we didn't do any like Bradley method or underwater orgasmic home birth.
Yeah, orgasmic home birth is big. We had the lady on here.
Yeah, she was good.
Yeah, she's good. It made me want to have a baby
at home.
Well, this orgasmic.
You get the kiddie pool or whatever.
The whole kind of thing.
Has
the doctor heard about this? Have you heard about this orgasmic birthing? Oh, my gosh.
You'll have to try it.
It's a real thing.
Bob loves it. They had the woman on. Yeah.
Some women, it's like the entire time is like having an orgasm.
My wife said the opposite. Yeah. That was for sure. They were like, there was not like a little bit of this, a little bit of that. It was not even close.
Not even close to that.
No.
Okay, so just it takes all kinds to make this beautiful world we have.
But there's obviously a trick to it.
If there was, everybody could try to find it.
Did she tell you on the show?
She just said there was one. Certain women have that response to
that. We were obviating or obfuscating that possibility by giving the epidurals.
You didn't learn that in med school?
No.
They didn't teach you about the orgasmic birth?
Didn't see anything like that.
No.
See, more information.
Lots of babies. But
more information. So then you're staying home. Do you get cabin fever?
I found, for the first time, this might sound hyperbolic, but for the first time in my life, I found myself bored.
Like, wow.
I don't get bored, but I just ran out of things. I had like,
isn't the baby always keeping you busy?
No, because what, she can't talk. she sleeps a lot. Like, I'm just kind of waiting for. Sometimes I'll stay up with her, and my wife will go to sleep, and then you know my daughter will be sort of sleeping, figuring out if she wants to go to sleep, and I'm like, all right, DVR is empty. Finally. Wow. Netflix, I go to watch it, and like, there's nothing that's in English anymore.
Oh, really?
Have you guys noticed that?
No.
I'm like, oh, this is a cool looking new box cover for something. I click on it, and it, you know, it's like a Korean crime
Maybe
thing.
Maybe your settings are off.
Yeah, your settings sound weird.
Netflix is just so... And I'm not against reading, but I would prefer it being a book, not on Netflix.
So when so you don't get Cabin Fever, you're getting a little bored. What I've found is great. Like, we'll just say, let's go to the village. That's code at my house. It means we're just going to go in the car and we're going to go down to Claremont Village for like 11 minutes. And then we're going to go back home. But it seems like you really did something.
Yeah, because you got to pack the car.
Yeah, you got to pack the car. You got to stroller up. You got to do this. You got to get the bag. You got to get this. You got to get breast milk and out of the fridge and warm it up. And we got to go. Okay.
There was a lot of distracting activities done in the name of not crying.
Just to go to Jamba Juice is literally it'll clear up your boredom.
Okay. It's more like kind of at the end of the night where I'm tired and I just don't have like enough brain power to. Maybe open up a book or something that I'll like really care about.
I don't understand why you stopped your podcast.
Because I knew I was going to have a kid.
I know, but it's such great material for you.
Yeah, I don't know. I just got busy with other stuff, and I put it on hold, and now I'm like,
you don't strike me as somebody who wants to use the baby as material. Maybe
I don't know. I'm kind of conflicted about that. Like, do I put pictures online? I mean, I have to a little bit of an extent, but I'm like, then do I want to get validation based upon how many Facebook people
like your kid.
Yeah. It's like, oh, she's cuter than 300 likes.
You know what? I'll tell you a sad thing. So I put a picture of my baby up, got like 240 likes. I put an obituary of a girl who died in Orange County, 2,500 likes. And so I was trying to measure, like, this is what the world cares about. Like, they like obituaries over baby pictures.
Well, that was dramatic.
It's weird. You got to say, it's a cultural weirdness thing there. Because you would think everybody that goes on my page would go, oh, it's a baby. Even if it's ugly, I'll just click on it to make the parents feel better.
I would have clicked on it.
I think you'd have some sort of commentary, though, if it flipped. You'd go, oh, look, all they can do is click on the babies. They don't care about this woman and her struggle with heroin
addiction.
That's
probably true. You know me too well. I'm a contrarian, is what you were saying.
No matter what.
But I found
maybe it's who you're friends with, though.
I'm friends with a bunch of drug addicts.
They prefer death to life. Yeah. Like the promise of like a young life, it's like, eh.
Whatever. It's never going to happen to me. I ask millennials all the time if they want to have family. Most of them haven't even thought of that. No, just in general.
Oh.
Haven't even thought of that.
I thought of that
when I was like 14 when I saw the Waltons. I was like, someday I'm going to be the dad and I'm going to have a bunch of kids.
Mark,
they've never even thought of it.
I think they've thought of it. I think the incidence of divorce, especially second and third, you know, divorces in families.
I got that.
You know, makes it tough. Why would you want to do it?
They see marriage. They either over-idealize their ability to do it and say it's going to be perfect and we're not going to make the mistakes they made, which of course they make, or they don't have any faith in it and say, why should I put myself
through
that misery?
There's that category of millennials that I've now experienced down in Orange County, which are more professionals and whatever. They're way, way focused on the price tag of their wedding. Oh, they'll tell it to
God.
You. They'll tell it
what
to you.
What a waste.
Like, what a weird... Like, wouldn't it be better to buy a house?
Yeah.
That's what I always think, because, you know... Do you know that there's a such thing as a $1 million wedding, and then a $500,000 wedding, and then a $300,000 wedding? Huh. It's like, what?
Like, your first one's $1 million, your second is half. Yeah.
It's a starter wedding.
They do these elaborate weddings. It's the big deal in upper middle class Orange County. These elaborate weddings.
I was at KTLA the other day, and I guess I tweeted something that Sam Rubin quoted, and it was the following: far too many beautiful weddings and terrible marriages.
Oh, that got you a lot of hate mail.
Well, but it's true.
It did get you a lot of money.
And that wasn't bad because people agreed. They're like, yeah, people spend a lot of money on weddings for crappy marriages that don't last.
So that's that idealized thing.
I don't know what that is.
It needs to start out in the most fabulous, celebratory, money is no object or cost is no problem because it's going to last forever. And then, you know, you have it in.
Depends who's paying for it.
It's always the parents, right? Parents, usually.
Yeah, for those big ones.
The girls' parents.
The girls' parents.
Yeah, girls. Yeah. See, I don't know that that's a tradition anymore. I think it's like a 50-50 split when you're getting up in the 300K, 500K realm.
Listen,
I think it's a 50-50 split.
In New York City, they have these crazy weddings and bar mitzvahs where Aerosmith plays, and they have like multi-million dollar weddings and bar mitzvahs.
Didn't you get paid $150,000 to sing the national anthem at someone's wedding?
I did not.
Oh, but you should.
You should. You should. That would be opening. You know what? If you got your minister license, do you know how much people would pay for you to marry them, Drew? Think about that. Caleb, can you set that up?
Ladies and gentlemen, from Teen Mom, your host. Yeah. / official.
I was at a beautiful wedding a couple months ago. The couple had been married multiple times, I imagine. They had lots of kids that were on stage with them. Some are grown adult kids. It was so cool. It was just simple. And the guy played guitar and sang to the girl.
Yeah.
Like a song that they liked. It was real simple
and
real nice.
Obviously, he's a very loving guy. It's his third marriage.
A lot of love to give. Yeah.
Anyways.
But back to the millennial thing. Have we walked away with any deeper understanding of what those
I have hope
are?
For them.
I do too.
I think everyone has hope for them. But yeah, I think
I like that you see it the way I'm poking at Dr. Young, that he sees what I see in terms of the experience information gap. It's creating some characterological issues that's feeding on their narcissism.
But again, I would go back to the anxiety issue as well. I mean, it just seems to me that anxiety in society is at an all-time high. I don't know if you'd agree with that, but among young people, they're just tense.
Well, it's funny. I sat in the bed this morning. I go, what is the matter with me? I am worried about everything. I said, and what did I say? I said, maybe it's the news media is getting to me finally. But I really was unhappy. I'm like, but part of it was thinking about this, the kids. Part of it was thinking about your stuff, the job market, and how that's going to work, how this is going to go. So I guess I'm guilty of feeling it.
But think about what our kids have gone through with private schools in Pasadena.
Yeah.
The anxiety that we felt as parents.
Oh, yeah.
To get them in.
Getting
Pacific
them there.
Pacific Oaks.
Getting them through.
Pacific
and then,
Oaks?
No, the Poly. No, Poly.
Polytechnic.
Is that harder than Pacific Oaks?
Oh, yeah. Pacific Oaks is one of the couple of those get to go to the higher
schools. Pacific Oaks had to cut down because they were overextended. They were having too many students. So it was a big hubbub there.
All right, fine. My daughter won't go there. Yeah, sounds like a mess.
Are you in 2 years? We'll prognosticate this now. You're going to start knowing this anxiety of where is your kid going to go to preschool?
You have to sign up now.
Absolutely.
Sign up now.
No, it's too late. It's too late.
Look at him. He's a deer in the headlights.
Yeah. And where they go to preschool determines where they go the next
step. That's the rest of their life. If you don't get her in the right preschool, her life is over.
Well, the public schools are unusable. And so I realize that's part of the problem. And we're in Sherman Oaks. And I just saw this story about the nearby middle school where Adam Carolla went. Walter Reed Middle School, where their funding is getting cut because they have too many white people.
Oh yeah, I heard that. I saw that in the paper.
What?
Yeah, you don't get funding if you don't have enough minorities.
If your minority population has to be 70% or higher, and you get all this extra funding, so now they have to lay off all these teachers. And I'm like, so if I send my white kid to a school, her teacher could get fired?
Yeah.
That's what I have to think about now?
It diminishes the value of the school and worsens the education. Listen, you're going to ruin the neighborhood.
And that's where Adam Carolla went to middle school.
Yeah.
And
he had a great experience.
Yeah. That's the public school situation.
Yeah.
I don't know. Because I didn't grow up here, so I don't know about all this
stuff. So you live here too in Pasadena?
I live 100 yards away.
Oh, okay. You could throw a rock to
this. Oh, okay. So that's how you guys wrote the book.
Yeah.
We met
on the street.
I started telling him. I started telling him how sick celebrities were, and he goes, "We need to document that." I went, "Okay, it's
all
easy."
All right.
Can you tell that to like everyone walking their dog in the neighborhood?
How sick everybody is.
Yeah.
You know what?
It's pretty obvious at this point. This is back in the day where you really had to peel the curtain.
Yeah,
back.
Then they were just
out in the open.
Yeah, then there was like he was like didn't believe me even. It was a resistance to the idea that these people have their shit together. These are lives worth living.
I just saw Mean Girls. That Lindsay Lohan, she's
so
gonna
good.
Be the next Meryl Streep.
And then I went down the love line for 2 years with Drew and met 250 celebrities.
And their entourages and things.
And Robin Quivers.
Oh, well, he created that whole mess. Do you know that?
Yeah.
That it was his doing.
It's
She was just being honest.
No, Mark.
Well, that's a problem.
Caleb, what is your understanding of what Mr. Dutch Young did?
She did not know that she was going to be the centerfold
of your book. No, what? No, Dutch Young, Howard, how did Howard seek you out even? Because you did, you went on the show before I ever did.
I was driving in Pasadena one day, and Gary Delabate called me on my cell phone.
To give the test to Howard
and his staff.
And so he did it, and he told him the results, and also revealed that Robbins was the highest we had gotten so far on the air, right?
Yeah, and it was in 2006, and she was okay then. It wasn't until we went on the show live in 2009.
No, she took issue with us putting it in our book, describing it in our book.
Yeah, that's right.
She wanted written consent before we wrote it in a book.
Verbal consent.
I wish I had consented her.
She got like 105?
34.
34.
34 out of 40.
And this is based kind of on the MMPI. Questions over and over again.
It's a forced choice. Yeah. We have to pick one of two.
I need to take it. I'm sure I'm way up there.
I want to beat
Robin Quivers.
I bet you're not way up there because you.
Exactly, we gave it to Bob.
Did we?
Well, yeah. Let's ask this. I probably did. I was part of the poll, but antisocial personality would reduce narcissism. No. I would think it does. Because you're always arguing the other side of the point, so you're kind of...
You are, but your point.
A negotiator.
But you're always... It's always your point.
No, I'm using other people's info, too.
No, but listen, I don't mean you personally. See, that's part of that narcissistic thinking, is that it's a cluster B disorder. Borderline, narcissist, antisocial. It's all a cluster B thing.
But doesn't anyone in recovery kind of skew a little higher?
Oh, yeah. No, they skew lower because they're in recovery. Before they got treatment, they were skewed higher. Yeah.
But isn't there still like a sense of self that's a little inflated?
Well, as Howard said, Howard Cerny goes, I would have been way off the chart if it had been before I went to analysis. And he's right. He had all these narcissistic features. They're bigger. They're more present until you get treatment, and they kind of
What AA calls it is pausing. That pausing, when you can see your immediate reaction to something and you can pause, now you can see your narcissist.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't have to do anything about it. You could decide pause. Push go.
right. And it's also still there. It's still this awareness
of it that is strange. And eventually you start to just get bored by it. You talk about bored. You just get bored by the same reaction to everything all the time. That I always have deferred to, I'm going to fight the good fights. And to me, we're at a critical point in America that we're either going to break apart or we're going to have cooler heads and more intelligent and more centrist ideas reign. And it's really crucial for every person to express where they're coming from, regardless of feeling attacked.
I would agree with you.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I think this next 20 years dictates the future of this country.
All right, fair enough. We'll leave it at that. I agree with you, Bob.
Speak up, speak out.
And we'll see you next time.
I held on to you. Now we're falling.
Now we're falling for